Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It's Tuesday, May 28th, 2024. Back in the saddle again after a couple of mini vacations over to the West Coast. Many thanks to my friends, the guest hosts. Ben Bueller Garcia, he did three shows, I think, for Ben, and Ryan Hansen did a travel show, a Bon Voyage travel. Jim Nintzel did a show. Dan Shear from the Green Valley News did two shows. And Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com, pulled in a did a Friday show. And Tim Steller of the Arizona Daily Star doing two shows. Actually, the show was, I heard most of the programs, and really good. Show is in very able hands. Thanks very much, gentlemen, for your support. The Buckmaster Show, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, also the place for all of our podcasts. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, and of course, we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Let's get the ball rolling with Dennis Hoffman, Dr. Hoffman, director of the L. William Seedman Research Institute at the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University, where he is the director of ASU's Office of the University Economist. His sponsored projects include the construction and maintenance of the tax revenue forecasting model that is used by the Executive Budget Office of the State of Arizona. He's been doing that since 1982. Dr. Hoffman, Professor Hoffman, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, Bill. And how about yourself?
Doing well. Had a nice break, and here we go, back in the saddle again. So we still don't have a budget, from what I understand. Is that correct?
I guess that's correct. I think they have agreement on revenues. I don't see them disagreeing a lot on revenues. Candidly, I think there's a few more bucks than what they're willing to agree on right now. But, it is volatile. There's been a little choppy revenue collections here over the last several weeks. And I think what they're doing is they've agreed upon a very conservative or modest a revenue picture. That now the question is, what's left, what can you fund? And, may indeed be the case that the agencies, come up a little short this spring in terms of their expectations. But, that's for them to decide. I focus on revenues and the economy, and I do my best to forecast them. So I think the economy is doing pretty well, Bill. We're not perhaps hitting on all cylinders at this point, but we're not doing too badly. But it's a situation where you've got haves and have-nots, that kind of thing. Some people doing really very well if you own your own home or have a fixed mortgage. If you're facing rental, the rental market, it's a bit more challenging.
You said that the tax collections have been a little choppy. Year to date, is it? How does it look compared to, say, the 12-month period last year?
Well, it's the problem with year-on-year comparisons right now is we're all challenged by the reverberating impacts of a pretty massive individual income tax cut and a change in tax law that allows people that have formerly filed individual income taxes to file over on the corporate side. And we don't know how many of those are doing that, but we're seeing that kind of reflecting in the numbers, but we're trying to figure out who's who there on the corporate side. So year-on-year comparisons are really difficult. I will tell you that 2 years ago this spring, the individual income tax collections were on the order of $7.5 billion. And we're going to be on the order of $4.8 billion for this year. So you can see you can see what we're kind of headed into. And, you know, part of that is a little bit of a change in the economy, but most of it is driven by the fact that the legislature and former Governor Ducey just decided that we didn't need that individual income tax revenue, and it was better left in the pockets of, well-to-do people, because that's where most of it stayed.
We're speaking with Dr. Dennis Hoffman, who is the director of the L. William Seidman Research Institute at the W.P. Carey School of Business at ASU. Inflation moderated in April, and nowhere, according to new government data, is the improvement more noticeable than the Metro Phoenix area. What a drop. I'm looking at these numbers. The Bureau of Labor Statistics indicating consumer price index, really, Phoenix did very, very well. Inflation increasing only about 2.6% over the past 12 months in the Valley.
It's getting better, Bill. It's absolutely getting better. You know, people should be pretty happy. You know, we've got a lot of grumpy folks when you go to the opinion polls. But, you know, things are doing really pretty well. I think some people long for, you know, the period of zero inflation that we had, say, for 8 or 10 years there in the 2011 to, you know, kind of 2019 kind of period. But, you know, that might be an anomaly. It's really difficult when you think about the policies of either a Mr. Biden or a Mr. Trump going forward and the policies of Congress. It's really hard to envision, you know, really, really low inflation rates going forward. I think what we need to do is for those people that were able to find that fixed rate mortgage back in the day, enjoy it. And the other thing I guess I would add when I hear people talk about inflation is I don't hear anybody complaining about the 20 to 25% wage hike. On average, that's what the data suggests. And most people have gotten a 20 to 25% wage hike since 2019. So a lot of wages are up to help pay those bills. I know some folks are hurting, but there's also a lot of folks that have much higher wages now than what they did in 2019.
When you hear about on the campaign trail about the Chinese tariffs, what do you think? What's your take on that?
Well, I'm a free trader. It's kind of a dying breed, I think. Nobody believes really much in globalization or free trade anymore from either political camp. And it's disappointing to me. I hear from Mr. Trump, you know, he wants to put in place another round of massive tariffs, not just at China, but at everybody. You know, with a misguided thought that somehow the foreign government pays the tariff and not the U.S. consumer. And that is just, you know, wrong. I don't know what other way to say it. It's just dead wrong. The U.S. consumer pays for tariffs. That's the way it works and the way it will always work. So, you know, if we're going to pass more tariffs, we're going to pay more for goods. Ultimately, a few more goods might be produced in this country, and people like to point to that, but we haven't found a way to produce products, you know, at costs that they're produced in other countries. And so, therefore, if we're going to go for domestic production, Bill, it's going to cost more. So if that's what we want, that's what we want, but then we want better pony up to the table and pay for it.
You know, before we let you go, circling back to those in the inflation report, kind of interesting that auto insurance, or as it's referred to as motor vehicle insurance, that's up almost 50% over the last couple of years. And yeah. another worrying thing in the home insurance areas like Florida, and I've just spent some time over on the coast. People are very concerned in California about that the name brand insurance carriers are just saying, we don't want to take the risk anymore.
That's right. That is, you've got it exactly right. They're deciding they want to make money elsewhere, and they're going to take their business elsewhere. And so, you know, places where there is weather risk or where there's earthquake risk, you know, it's going to be a challenge, and that could hit some places in the high country here in Arizona, or in, you know, in places where there's fire risk, or obviously over in California where there's earthquake risk, or in Florida, of course, with the hurricanes.
Yeah, so something to keep an eye on. Dr. Hoffman, always a pleasure. We'll circle back with you in a month or so. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Bill. Be well.
All right. Thank you very much. Dr. Dennis Hoffman from Arizona State University. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's open right now for lunch. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. And they open for breakfast 6:30 in the morning, Tuesday through Sunday. Was up at Mona's. Actually, I've lost track of the days. I think it was Sunday. I saw Jan and Jack from Owners of Green Things, and we'll talk about Green Things in a minute. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, and again, the website for Mona's, monasdanishbakery.com. Shelley Fishman is with me, and Shelley's got a teetering thumb, a little bit up, a little bit down. We'll explain right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for Marketplace Trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Shelley Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelley via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
And it's my pleasure to have Shelley across from me seated at the Buckmaster Show table. And it's been a while. I think this might be our first back-to-back, maybe 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, it has been.
You've been traveling. Welcome back to you. You had quite the adventure overseas. It was a wonderful trip by and large. And here we are. So it seems like, at least with the Dow anyway, things were going pretty well up until about midweek last week.
Then, last week we peaked at about 6% year-to-date for the Dow. Massively overbought. I mean, we had priced earnings.
We hit just about 40,000.
Mm-hmm. But when you took a look at the price to earnings ratios in the Dow, they were at 25, 26, 27 instead of down at 17 or 18 where they belong. So, you know, there was bound to be a day of reckoning.
And to get back into what might be considered more realistic territory.
So the S&P 500 is doing just fine. And the NASDAQ is doing just fine. So I think that kind of readjusting the Dow back to more reasonable P/E ratio kind of measurements makes some sense.
Overall, though, the year has been pretty good.
Overall, as you were talking, we get close to the midway point here already of the year. When you mean in the market?
Yeah.
Well, the markets have been fine. Yeah. If the markets were to keep up at the rate that they are right now, we'll have another banner year. Last year was very, very good. This year, until last week, was also exceptionally good. The NASDAQ needed to do some catching up. Usually the NASDAQ runs ahead of the S&P, but there was a little bit of sluggishness. Remember, you know, you and Dr. Hoffman were talking a little bit about this. We have things working in this economy now that have never quite been this way before.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, investors, you know, are looking for tea leaves all over the place to see where the future is going. In general, the investment community has been very optimistic about the economy. Some economists, of course, over the past 3 or 4 years have kept on saying, woe is us, we're going to have a recession, and it ain't never come.
Uh-huh. And they talked a lot about a soft landing or a hard landing.
Well, that's happened already.
Yeah.
I mean, we're
that's in the rearview mirror,
that's
right?
That's in the rearview mirror. Now, the Fed is not quite convinced that we're where we need to be. Phoenix appears to be.
Yeah.
In terms of inflation.
Doing well
up there. But our inflation in the two measurements, the one that we look at for some of the volatility is a little higher than what Jay Powell would like to see. And the inflation measurement that he looks at, which takes out some of that volatility, is still at around 3.1% when he wants to see it down at 2%.
Mm-hmm.
Not clear to me, given the national policy that we've seen both from the Trump and also, by the way, the current administration, with imposing tariffs, is ever going to allow us to get back to the 2% or even less that Dr. Hoffman was referring to, which was close to 0% inflation. So when we look at inflation, we have to take a practical look at what has changed fundamentally in national policy and international policy. Do we have, you know, free trade anymore internationally? Open markets? No. Are the various government agencies, both here and in the industrialized world, putting their foot on the gas and their foot on the brakes to try to readjust things? Yes. Are the Chinese trying to reverse some of that stuff? Well, sure. So exactly how that's going to work out is not clear. I've been complaining about Biden's holding on to the Trump tariffs through his administration, and now he made it worse 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, what's that about?
Well, you know, he really believes that it is very important to get manufacturing back into this country.
Mm-hmm.
And while I agree with him, and Ben and I talked about this kind of at length last week, you can't just do it. You've got to give the factories and the industries that you want to bring back chances to build and chances to find the labor forces they need to bring that production back here. And we haven't done that.
That's not an overnight fix.
It is not an thank you. Mm-hmm. It is not an overnight fix. And to think that just in imposing tariffs, I think there are ways of phasing tariffs in, making sure that the countries that you're affecting, not just China, but a bunch of Asian countries, but in Trump's world, he wants to put tariffs on everybody, put tariffs on Mexico and Canada, and these are our allies,
mm-hmm.
and we rely on each other's economies to keep bolstering our own. So, I don't know. This is all going to play out over the next couple of years, and how markets react to it is going to be very interesting to watch.
And then Dr. Hoffman touched on this, that people will say, well, I'm doing okay, but everybody else seems to be hurting.
He has a very nice way of expressing it. Mm-hmm. I have been less successful, I think, than he, because I kind of get tied up in terminology like macroeconomic terminology and microeconomics. Whenever you're looking at averages, and that's what economists look at, you always have the possibility that the outliers at the top and the bottom are going to be either unduly advantaged or unduly disadvantaged. And if you talk to those people, and there are a bunch of them who are unduly disadvantaged, they scratch their heads and say, this economy is really hurting us.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, when you take a look at the averages, it's the old, feet on a block of ice and head in the oven. On average, you're just fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to be either in the oven or on a block of ice. And the thing that I always come back to more fundamentally is the fact that we have such income inequality in this country and, in the West in general, that what happens is that all of the GDP growth, and it's been very significant over the past 50 years, has floated to the top 10% of earners, which meant that the middle class has stagnated. And that is very, very troubling because, when you do this for a couple of years, okay. When you do it for a couple of generations, you build up a lot of resentment and a lot of embedded feelings about the economy that are not provably true,
mm-hmm.
from the perspective of, again, macroeconomics, but are demonstrably something that you feel is true. And when you feel something is true, it is true. Perception is reality. And that's what I think Dr. Hoffman was getting at. And it's the thing that I think is troubling so many people in this country right now.
Well, folks decided we're going to travel this Memorial Day weekend, and they traveled in huge numbers, record numbers, going all over the place. So it looks like it's going to be a huge summer for travel.
Yeah.
And you and I have both been in and out of a few airports over the last couple of weeks.
Gosh, people are
out there. They're out there traveling.
Well, what I can tell you is, for instance, just this morning, and I haven't seen it in writing yet, but I heard it on the radio in driving here to the studio, that consumer confidence numbers are up measurably for the first time in a couple of months. When you take a look at what's going on with people traveling and going on vacations and driving and flying, people vote with their dollars, and they're voting with those dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So I scratch my head and say, wait a second. When a pollster calls you, and you say, I'm kind of doing okay, but all my neighbors are rotten. and then everybody goes on vacation. I wonder about where all that rotten is. Statistically, what we've seen is that even though inflation is higher than we'd like it to be, for the past 2 years, wage gains among the lower quartile of earners have outpaced inflation.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want to hear that, mm-hmm. because they still see, $5 for a dozen eggs. And mm-hmm. as Dr. Hoffman was saying, you still have rentals that are very high, mortgage rates that are high. Some of the rates for money-based items like mortgages and car financing and that kind of thing, credit cards, are very, very high. We need to get the interest rates down. So there are things we need to do to normalize things. But one thing that I can tell you is we're not going to have disinflation, at least not a lot of it. So the price rises that we've seen over the past 3 or 4 years ain't going away. This is the new normal.
Yeah, it is.
The new level. And we've got to start getting used to it.
One thing I noticed, I was watching maybe a little more than I, and I know watching a little more of the financial TV than I would, these Fed governors going, love to get on CNBC, and then everybody says, oh my, somebody just said something, a Fed-related person just said something, and then the market goes crazy.
Well, yes, because they're the experts, and one of the things is, depending upon who's talking, you can get forecasts and that are 180 degrees out of sync with each other, and you just wonder, are they seeing the same data? You know, and everybody brings a somewhat political bias to how they view the data. We'll get another readout from the Fed and from the Fed Chair Powell. I think it's the 15th and 16th of June. I may have those dates a little bit wrong. But, I'm not expecting at this point that the Fed is going to cut interest rates. I wish to heck they would, but I'm not expecting them to.
Okay, Shelley Fishman, great to see you again. Shell, thanks.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at Moe'sGallery.com.
Welcome back. It is Buckmaster on a Tuesday, one of those days it feels like kind of a Monday because we took, of course, Memorial Day off, so we're back live. And for me, I took about 18 days away, and it was good just to kind of recharge the batteries. Saw Jan and Jack, the owners of Green Things, over at Mona's over the weekend, Mona's Danish Bakery, and Jan and Jack doing very well and want me to pass along how much they appreciate all of the Buckmaster Show listeners, and a lot of them go by Green Things, and this is they're ready for the kind of the pre-monsoon and putting in some beautiful summer flowers. And yeah, there are some flowers that actually will thrive in the summer, and so they can point you in the right direction. GreenThingsAZ.com, the sister business, SocoloVillage.com. All right, for our live line, when we do our telephone interviews, that's presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's good to welcome Dr. Jeff Silvertooth, our contributor on agriculture, back to the program. Dr. Silvertooth, professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science. He served on the University of Arizona faculty and worked statewide since 1987. He's been recognized as a fellow and is recognized as a fellow for both the American Society of Agronomy and Soil Science Society of America. Jeff, good to see you.
Likewise, Bill. Thank you.
Always a pleasure to have you on the show. And there's been a lot of news concerning the allocation on the Colorado River. And actually, that news is coming out of the First Nations, as we refer to them, off of the Indian Nations, and specifically the Navajo Nation. An agreement was signed up at Window Rock, which is the kind of the legislative hub of the Navajo Nation, on Friday. What's that all about? It's pretty important, isn't it?
Very important, particularly for those tribes. Three tribes signed onto this agreement, and that's a big deal in itself to get three tribes to agree.
San Juan, Southern Paiute, and the Hopi tribes.
Yes, sir. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so if anybody that's familiar with tribal relations knows that, you know, they don't always agree. They don't always get along, and there's plenty of that, you know, that had taken place. So it's monumental in that regard. Secondly, it's an effort on their part to secure water rights that they have not had. They've been seeking for a long time, and they really, I think, are pretty strategically correct in asserting themselves. They've been building their case for this for some time, but they've got a situation now kind of like the stars are aligned for them pretty well with a Democratic administration in Washington and a administration in Arizona that's receptive to their pleas and to their requests. And so they've been fortunate to come among themselves to come together with this agreement. So they're forging a new path. Now, it still has to go to Congress to get approved, but Congress has been approving a lot of water rights, I think something over 30 some in the past 20 years, and they've got 22 pending. So it'd be interesting to see how this works out.
What does this give them? A share of the Colorado River water, or what?
In part, and part of it to clarify some of their, like Navajo's case, clarify some of their rights on the Little Colorado River.
Right.
Also provides to them some infrastructure improvements that they're going to have on their reservations. So a pipeline will come out of Lake Powell, for example, that the federal government will be responsible for if this is approved by Congress as it's written now. This pipeline would be approved and then funded and built by this federal government for them. And then also to, you know, a direct partitioning in their water rights and associated with their lands, and a lot of infrastructure development to get water out onto the reservations where they have a lot of people that just don't have running water. So they're asking for that infrastructure support very heavily as well.
And there's a related story that the Navajo Nation approved a proposed settlement to secure Colorado River water.
Yes, sir.
So this is different.
Yeah, it's different but related. Yes, yeah. Part of their water rights settlement.
So it's a win. They've got a couple of wins going for them.
They do. They've got some wind in their sails as they head towards this. And I think it's important to say that hasn't been approved by Congress yet, but they have at least agreed upon a settlement among those three tribes, and they have themselves pretty well settled down and heading in the right direction. You know, other tribes have been able to do this in the state pretty well, probably the best in the past probably 20, 30 years in terms of this kind of, say, political organization to work in this, you know, arena of the United States with regard to water rights has been the Gila River Indian Community, GRIC, we call them GRIC by short, and the Colorado River Indian Tribes over on the Colorado River and over there in Maupas County, CRIT. We oftentimes refer to them as CRIT and GRIC, respectively. But they have done a good job of positioning themselves politically, so they probably have some of the strongest voices, large water rights as well. And now the Navajos are stepping in with a little more force, and they're joined with the Southern Paiutes and the Hopis, very importantly.
So what I'm hearing about this, the last year, 2023, was a pretty good water year for the Colorado River. Mm-hmm. And through some prudent management, we're in fairly decent shape in 2024. Is that what you're understanding?
Well, right now in 2024, we're yes. under what we call drought contingency plans, tier one guidelines. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we have, in this case, Arizona being some of our water's lower priority. So we have a 512,000 acre foot reduction from our 2.8 million acre foot allocation from the Colorado River, the largest among the basin states. But that's due to the ranking of the water rights. So the prospect on the river this year, as what I've read thus far, with the snow melt and the return to the river, reservoirs recovery from that water, and the situation should not probably change from that tier one. Now, I remember a couple of years ago, I think it was 23, we were in tier 2A, mm-hmm. and that took us down, Arizona, down to 592,000 acre feet mm-hmm. reduction from the Colorado River. And so what we want to do is we want to be out of the tier one reductions at all, but if we're going to have to do them, tier one's the best one for us or for anyone on the river.
This is a generational problem. I mean, going forward, this water situation is going to be something that's going to be the big news story for generations.
Yeah, it is.
In Arizona, anyway.
You know, throughout the South. Throughout the West.
Yeah.
Throughout the Western states. I've been interacting with people throughout the Western states in the past few years, and you know, this is a ubiquitous problem in many, many parts of the country, probably most pronounced here in the desert Southwest, obviously, but it's certainly going to be an ongoing issue for us, and it's really been exacerbated and really brought to the fore by this 23 years of drought that we have, you know, really a mega drought, and that's really put things in a more accentuated tone with regard to water crisis, water shortages, and population continues to grow. So there's some real dynamic tensions that are really bringing all this to bear. But, you know, the state of Arizona and some of these other western states are growing pretty fast. And we've got, close to 7.5 million people in the state right now. So it's an issue to consider for today and the future.
Did a couple of mini trips over to the coast. And to get to the coast from Arizona, you've got to go over a huge desert. And I'm not just talking about the desert over by Yuma. That desert by Palm Springs, that is amazing. From the air, looking down at that, it's like coming out of the L.A. basin, and you know what I'm talking mm-hmm. about. You see all the development up until about Palm Springs mm-hmm. and the Palm Desert area. Then it just becomes, you could be over the Sahara Desert.
Just about. Sahara's pretty severe if you've ever been out there. Well, at least we have a few bushes
but
and shrubs here and there.
There is no population over there. No. No settlements that I could see.
Well, no, that's probably the harshest country in North America.
Yes.
You know, you look at, you know, that coastal range cuts off the moisture coming yes. from the West Coast, and we call that an orographic effect or a rain shadow effect. And so if you come right next to that curtain, which would be the coastal range
yes.
coming off of the West Coast of the United States, it cuts that water off. And so the sharpest escarpment is right there where you're talking about, mm-hmm. right past those mountains, that gateway mm-hmm. out of the L.A. Basin. I think San Gregorio Mountain and San mm-hmm. Ignacio, those two big gateways.
Yeah.
And it's about the most severe desert in North America. Now, it also, too, brings back to bear what John Wesley Powell was saying about the Western United States over 100 years ago. He made a demarcation at the 100th Meridian, which is the western line of the state of Oklahoma, if you look uh-huh. at it that way, and it runs up and down through the United States. West of there, he called it the Great American Desert, or the
yes.
Arid Region.
Uh-huh.
And he published a map and a report from the USGS in 1892. It's called the Powell Map.
Uh-huh.
And the Powell Map lines out these arid regions, and it's interesting. You look at that area you're talking about,
yes.
and that's all of it ends right on the coastal range from Baja California all the way to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And west of the coastal range, of course, it's pretty lush and wet. We, mm-hmm. you know, typically if you go up in places like Northern California, Oregon, Washington, but east of there, mm-hmm. out across the arid west, It's considered the arid region, and he was suggesting that we break up the states or any territories more or less on watersheds, and his map delineated that. And that's really interesting because you really see those watersheds out there in that desert you're talking about being really critical to what we're talking about today. And if we'd followed Wesley Powell's, John Wesley Powell's advice, we might not be in all the litigation we're in today. That's what he was trying to get us to avoid. It's interesting you mention it that way, Bill.
Yeah, and then as you're flying east, then the next kind of settlement and the green you'll come into is the Imperial Valley, and as you start to get into the watershed area of the Colorado River,
right,
and which is, as you very well know, like our lettuce production, kind of the lettuce breadbasket of the world.
Mm-hmm. It's as if through the United States and Canada, Yuma, the Southern Colorado River valleys, Imperial, particularly Yuma area, provide 98%, about 95% of the leafy green vegetables for the United States and Canada from November to March every year.
Agriculture is so important.
But that's
about
water from the Colorado River.
Yep,
pardon me for interrupting.
All right. We will have more with Jeff Silvertooth. It's Buckmaster on a Tuesday. Be right back.
Thank you.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It's the Buckmaster Show. This portion of the program presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. This time of year, we like to say, well, it's going to be cooler over in Silver City. Pretty much can guarantee about 10 degrees cooler because of the elevation. So it makes a outstanding getaway, only about 3 hours east of Tucson. Lots to do, a lot of outdoor activities, fun things to do in Silver City, that Victorian architecture. It's a pretty downtown area there in Silver City. Their website, southwestnewmexico.org. Jeff Silvertooth is with us, University of Arizona agronomist, and Jeff has spent time over in that area of Silver City and over toward the road over to Silver City in southeastern Arizona. And we've talked before about the chili production. People think it, excuse me, they think of New Mexico, but Arizona's got the great chilies too.
Absolutely. Arizona has the production for the seed that produces about 97% of the green chilies in the Southwest chili belt. So when you look at Hatch chilies, that's coming, probably those seeds are probably coming from a seed company, Curry Chili and Seed Company,
yeah,
in Cochise County.
I had a chance to visit with Ed Curry, who you know very well, and at the award ceremony, that I was very thankful to receive that award from the college for Science Communicator of the Year because of the interviews I do, like with people like you. And I got a chance to meet Ed Curry. I'm fascinated by the work he is doing, Jeff Silvertooth, on the medicinal benefits of chili.
Medicinal benefits of chili, and he's working with several other crop plants to consider extracting medicinal compounds that could be brought out of those plants, and we can produce them here in the Southwest with a high degree of productivity of those healthy plants produce those healthy compounds. And it's pretty much a strong
kind
proponent
of a pioneer in this area, right?
Sure enough, yeah.
Yeah. Where is his operation specifically, Ed Curry?
Where is it? It's in Cochise County, right at the eastern side of the Dragoon Mountains, if you know where Cochise Stronghold is. Mm-hmm. His farm is just basically right below Cochise Stronghold, so it's close to Pierce and Sunsites, Arizona, and the kind of central part of the southwestern part of the Sulphur Springs Valley.
And he was talking about that some of the retailers are looking at some of these products.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, chilies are growing and demanding in the United States, probably a larger mm-hmm. function of our larger Hispanic population, Mexican population. Mexican populations particularly bring in the chilies. It's not really ubiquitous across the whole Latin or Spanish-speaking world. But that's really growing in popularity in the United States. And also, too, Ed's been doing a lot of work with the folks at New Mexico State, mm-hmm. and I believe in Texas A&M and a few other places. The lady at Cornell has been involved in that as well, studying these various compounds that are in chili and realizing some of these medicinal benefits. And how do you amplify that genetically for the production of the crop and also then extract them and use them appropriately? So it's a really interesting area of study right now.
I want to talk a little bit about this article that was published by the Arizona Farm Bureau, and they really do, they, and rightly so, praise you. Was it Julie Murphy was right. the author of this article, and she says, one University of Arizona graduate calls you, Jeff Silvertooth, the king of soils. So
you know, that's quite a title, I tell you.
And in this article, you talk about Arizona's soils being geographically young, fertile, and extremely productive.
Yeah, geologically.
If they are reclaimed.
Right.
And managed the right way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. They're geologically young. You know, so they haven't been weathered extensively.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a lot of organic matter because of our climate, because of that young, geologically speaking, weathering. But they are extremely fertile if they're reclaimed. Now, they're also saline and naturally sodic because they're in this desert you were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And if they, that requires water and it requires good management. So they say these soils are geologically young, highly fertile, highly productive if they're managed properly. And a large part of that management has to do with water management for salinity. To leach the salts, soluble salts out of the soils, maintain those salts out of the soils, and also remove the excess sodium. So yeah, they're tremendously productive soils in that regard. These alluvial soils in the valleys of Arizona.
What's interesting about that is that if you
if you talk to someone perhaps back east or in the Midwest and you were talking about Arizona and soil as being productive, they would probably look at you, I thought it was just all desert out there. So the key word, if these soils are reclaimed and managed properly.
Yes, sir. Exactly.
But if they're not reclaimed, well, it's a different story.
No go. You're going to produce desert vegetation.
That's the key there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that takes water and good management. Mm-hmm. And a management that you talk about other parts of the country that say, well, you really have any soils out there? You know, you have a lot of rock and sand, you know, that's for sure. But in these alluvial valleys, we have these beautiful soils that have been deposited out in there. But they do take good management. And actually, you look anywhere in the world, Arizona, we have the highest yields per unit area, per acre, and the highest quality of crops because we take advantage of these soils and this climate. The climate's key to that as well. But that management is key. And it goes back to some things I say once in a while. Bill, the average person probably doesn't recognize the expertise required to farm today, but we put it bluntly, we just don't pull any dude off the street to go do this stuff, you know. So it's a sophisticated business in that regard, but the managers and the farmers that are out there in the desert have to be dealing with those factors all the time to be successful. And they are. They do it well.
So what about salt in the soil? It's a problem.
It's a problem, particularly, and plants range in their susceptibility to salt, or sensitivity, or tolerance, I should say, of salinity. So, for example, you're talking about the leafy green vegetables.
Yes.
They're some of the most sensitive plants that we could grow. They're, you know, leafy greens are soft tissues. They're not they didn't evolve in a desert environment at all. But we can grow them here in the wintertime climatically because that's an environment that fits well for their production, and we have to manage those soils with regard to salinity. So that's an area that's a great example, Bill, that salinity has to be managed at a level low enough that those plants will tolerate it. Now, you go to other crops like alfalfa or cotton or barley, wheat, much more salt tolerant. One of the reasons we grow them in abundance in the desert is because of that salinity tolerance. So the less salt, the more salt tolerant a crop is, the less water you and I have to apply to maintain those salts. And we got a little extra room there. So sometimes, too, farmers will have crops like that, more preferably in areas where they have saline water, for example. Some of the waters become saline, particularly some groundwaters. But it's a balancing act all the time, depending on the crops you're growing and the kind of conditions you're in.
Before the Imperial Valley and before the whole agriculture, where did we get our lettuce? Before that, or did we even do much lettuce because it was so dependent? I guess the railroad made a big difference with shipping lettuce.
Railroad did originally, but in answer to your question, your first part of that question, where did it come from?
Yes.
Before we developed the lower Colorado River Valley, Florida was a large production area. It still is, but it primarily serves now the eastern seaboard. And we had some coming out of South Texas and a few of the little spots, but when the industry really, it's happened in the time, I've been here almost 40 years now, and it's really happened during the time in the past 30 years. It's been, if you look at our stats and the crop mix that we've had, it really shifted about 30 years ago. And a big part of that was the industry recognizing that there was this opportunity in that part of the country, and they built the infrastructure, coolers, shippers, you know, there's the highway, Arizona I-State, Interstate 8. You come right out of the Yuma or Imperial Valley out of those coolers and those trucks hit the road. There's several hundreds of trucks coming out of there every day during that production season and shipping that stuff all over the country. So you and I fly to New York City or Chicago, Seattle, out there on the coast where you just visited in the wintertime during those months, and we sit down and have a salad or some broccoli, cauliflower. That's coming right out of that Yuma area right there, I guarantee you. You know, very well, 95% chance would be, unless it's you're in the eastern part of the country, you might be getting some out of Florida.
And unlike other states, Arizona does grow and harvest year-round, 12 months a year.
Absolutely. That's an interesting feature of production out here in the desert.
Always a pleasure, Jeff Silvertooth, and we've got your next appointment, I think, already scheduled, so we'll look forward to seeing you in about a month.
Likewise, Bill. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Always a pleasure to see you. Thank you. Jeff Silvertooth, agronomist from the University of Arizona. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. My return to the live airways after a little bit of a break. It's good to be back. Be with you tomorrow after some dental work at 8 a.m. So if I talk a little funny at noon, it'll be the Novocaine. Hopefully, we'll have worn off by noon. Hope so. See you then.